Hi, Chris, can you hear me okay?
Yeah, Chuck, I can. Thanks, Colonel. Appreciate it.
You bet.
Okay, again, let's go with how many folks do you have in your command, and what's your sit rep? What's the mission that you're dealing with right now?
Well, my mission is to advise the commanding general and the governor of Anbar Province on economic development matters for one of 18 provinces in Iraq. And I've got about five Marines under my command, as well as about six or seven civilians in the Anbar Provincial Reconstruction Team.
How's in your daily dealings with the governor, the Iraqis there? How is how's that going? I mean, how close are they getting to to really getting a leg up to do some standing on their own?
You know, I would have to tell you, I've had the benefit of being here on a couple of occasions. First in 2004 and 5, and then most recently February of 2008. And I would say that there's a very positive, strong trajectory that I've observed over the last several years with respect to the province's ability to administer its own budget, plan and develop its economy, and to provide the conditions necessary for what we would call economic revitalization. And this is sort of the ability for small, medium-sized enterprises merely to return to a normal state of employment and consumption. So overall, very positive, in my judgment.
How's the opposition been in terms of, hampering your efforts or the Iraqi efforts themselves to kind of get back going in your particular province?
By opposition, are you referring to Al-Qaeda insurgents?
Yeah, the AQI insurgents, things like that.
Sure. No, good question. I think we have to keep in mind, as we do every day in my job, that we are entering into what I would call sort of the ninth inning here, the last 10 meters to locate, close, and destroy remnants of Al-Qaeda in the province. On a day-to-day basis, from an economic standpoint, most of the economic activity is occurring in what we call a corridor of cities that parallel the Euphrates River. And by and large, Al-Qaeda has rendered all but ineffective in their ability to influence and or disrupt those economic activities. We do have pockets in the what we would call the rural areas or the Wadi systems where Al-Qaeda has been forced to operate. Some of the cities out towards the western part of Anbar are perhaps a little bit more exposed. But in those cases, really, Al-Qaeda has been rendered to an occasional dramatic attack. But on a day-to-day basis, they're really quite ineffective and incapable of dismantling or derailing a lot of the economic progress from what I've observed in my time here.
So basically, they're hanging out by the Syrian border, maybe finding some company over there on the western border, and then kind of sneaking in when they can to the east.
We've had some instances of that as well. And we also have seen Al-Qaeda pushed out of Anbar, having moved up to the north, and recently having their nose bloodied up north. They're attempting to, at times, enter back into the province. But the bottom line is it is increasingly difficult for them to exercise any kind of freedom of mobility, maneuver, and command and control. And that's a good thing for us and the Iraqi people here in Anbar.
No, Colonel, in your first tour over there, 04, 05, were you kind of in a similar capacity or in a similar province?
I happen to have been here in the city of Ramadi, and I was the civil affairs team leader and advisor to the municipal government and the coalition force commander. So I was right here in the same place I am today. I was not as focused on economic development given the security situation at the time. Back then, there was a considerable greater amount of what we call kinetic activity or combat.
What's and here comes some loaded questions. So if we're going a place you don't want to go, I totally understand. You've had the benefit of being stateside for a little bit in between your tours, and now that you're back, what are some of the things that you see in terms of, folks like yourself and the American soldiers kind of being this political football, in terms of what we see is going on versus what's really going on. You know, what's the real difference out there when you get down and, you know, your hands in the dirt like you are, that those of us in America, we don't see, or we, you know, doesn't get reported as much?
You know, that's a good question and a very fair question. I've spent time personally reflecting on it, in particular during my 2.5 years when I was back after my first tour. I'll be as honest with you, Chris. I think that we have a very professional press and media corps writ large. Not unlike the Marine Corps, you certainly are going to have your percent of bad apples. But by and large, my experience working with journalists and reporters embedded with my unit in 2005 and a little exposure now is they're intelligent, they're good at what they do, they have very good factual understanding of the region and the country. I think that one of the challenges, though, is that we're dealing with a very complex situation. It's complex in a couple of ways. One, you're dealing with a country where none of the world's bottom billion living off less than a dollar a day live. Iraq is, by every measure fiscally, a very wealthy country. There's sectarian violence and an insurgency that has undergone several years of activity. And to be able to understand and report on the nuances and the complexities, the socioeconomic, religious complexities, I think you darn near have to be an academic scholar to break it down. And what that means is when I'm home with friends and family at a dinner party enjoying a glass of wine, it's very difficult to put what's happening here into layperson terms. You know, the average person, in my judgment, you get into a 5-minute discussion of any degree of sophistication, and it's easy to get lost in translation. And I think our press is somewhat forced then to report things at somewhat of a topical level. I think there's advantages and disadvantages of that. And I personally am not comfortable, you know, ascribing that topical reporting to a malicious intent or an abrogation of media responsibility. That said, I certainly have come across my share of bad reporting, if that makes sense.
Yeah, look, Colonel, let me ask you, excuse me for interrupting, but what I was kind of getting at is, you know, while you were home and when you were having those glasses of wine or, you know, having your downtime, seeing the way that a lot of people in our region especially, you know, we'll protest just about anything, it seems like, in the Northwest. But, in terms of the way you saw, the public's reaction to how things have been going versus what's really going on and things, how did you view that during those 2.5 years back and, you know, trying to explain to people, you know, no, it really isn't that simple, or no, it's not this, or, you know, just seeing the discord in our state particularly?
Well, there were moments where it was difficult. You know, you come back from a situation in Iraq, and for me personally, you have a far greater appreciation of the basic rights and freedoms that we have day to day. And in the course of dialogue or discourse or discussion with friends, you're not always going to have two reasonable people who agree. But I would take that as an opportunity to shed some light on actual events on the ground and to use examples, not necessarily to prove I was right and they were wrong, but just to inform the debate and discussion. And that to me is probably one of the most important things that I experienced when I was back home in between tours.
What do you miss the most? I mean, we're trying to bring these interviews I do down to a lot more kind of a personal level. And I know, to make it to Lieutenant Colonel, you've been at this a while, and you've just had a chance to be home. What are the things, you know, besides the family, because that's so huge, but, the trips to Pike Place, maybe grabbing a Mariner game, you know, what are the things that you really kind of, when you have a moment to go, man, today would be a good day to be at Puget Sound?
That's a good question. Two things. Mountains and salt water, because there's none of that here for a long, 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 area around. It's just all brown desert, and there are those moments I get a hunkering to get up on Rainier, do some skiing at Crystal. And I certainly miss the Puget Sound and hanging out up in the San Juan Islands. So,
I talked to a couple of guys who say they really miss a good salmon barbecue.
Yes, and I might add, I love to cook. So barbecuing salmon and having a good Hefeweizen is right up there on my top things that I miss.
Yeah, so you want to be heading to Pyramid, you know, some days as opposed to the Chow Hall.
That's right. You got it. A little iced tea isn't quite cutting it.
And what's the family? You have a wife, some family. And are they all here in Seattle? Or?
Yes, they are. My wife, Gina. And we've got three daughters and a little boy, Danielle, Kathleen, Morgan, and our little boy, Chase. We are in Renton, actually, Lower Kennydale, not too far from where the new Seahawks facility is going.
Oh, good. You ever get up to Newcastle? You hit the ball at all, maybe once or twice?
You know what? I get up to Newcastle, the golf course. I typically would get up there and run my dogs up in the foothills there and the trails. But... it's a nice area.
Let me ask you this, Colonel. Obviously, we got Independence Day coming up here in a few days. What's it like, or what do you anticipate, you know, serving over there, doing what you're doing on a day or a holiday weekend like Independence Day?
There's a little bit of bittersweetness to it. You know, the downtime leaves you an opportunity to think about home, your loved ones. You miss them. And I think that longing for home is juxtaposed by your mission, enjoying a little bit of time down. And I think for me personally, it's a chance to recommit to your sense of purpose and what you're doing here, why you chose to be here. And, you know, the juxtaposition of missing home and yet enjoying what you're doing is a little bittersweet. But that I would say that comes with the territory as well.
You feel like, you know, you're still fighting for independence. It's just in a different, you know, kind of in a different kind of way.
Yes, and I'll share with you a brief story. In my first tour here, we helped the Iraqis conduct their first ever democratic election. And we had a number of casualties. At some points, war takes a toll on your positive outlook in life. And just about the time I had sort of had a small taste of cynicism, I had a young Iraqi boy come up to me and tap on my shoulder, and in his best broken English said to me that when I went home to tell the families who have lost their loved ones over here to say thank you for their sacrifices, and because of those sacrifices, the Iraqis were free to have their first vote. Now, that conversation probably took 30 seconds, but it brought home for me this notion of independence in a very Iraqi fashion.
Well, we're all thinking of you and all the other Northwest soldiers, all the soldiers in general, as we shoot off a firework or two, knowing that the fireworks you're dealing with come with a serious back end.
Yeah, that's right. Blow some big ones for me, though.
You got it, sir. Thanks, Colonel. I appreciate the time. Stay safe, all right?
Will do, Chris. Take care. Thank you.
All right, have a great 4th of July.
Same to you.
Okay,
bye.
Bye-bye.